The San Jose Sharks fall to the Pittsburgh Penguins in a familiar face, 6-3. We'll talk about all that, and maybe Landy will have some time to talk about the Hurdle trade finally? Questions. We'll talk to you after this. But first, if you want to be a part of the show and join the Chompversation chat with us and fellow Sharks fans on the page or the app, follow us across all the social media garbage, that being the YouTube, the X platform, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Reddit, Discord, and of course all the shenanigans going down at TikTok. Find all of that and more at tealtownusa.com. And if you want to help support the pod and help get Puck Guy a new MacBook at Tealtown USA on the Venmo machine would be very, very helpful and grateful for all of your support. And this evening, I am joined by a good friend of mine, Ian Reed. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. You know, I think the initial, you know, I have yet to do an after dark, after trade deadline. So I had a lot of thoughts. And, you know, honestly, I took a little bit of time to get my head around what happened, kind of figure out, okay, you know, I guess the total rebuild is now finally, you know, being taken seriously. And I think we had talked a little bit about the team trying to still have one foot in the compete and one foot in the rebuild kind of mentality. And I think Greer finally said enough's enough, and we've got to fully redo this and fully strip it down. And here we are. So the San Jose Sharks are now, I think, probably at their lowest point as far as trajectories go. And considering where we're at in the season and what the main objective now is for the season, I think it's a good thing. But I do want to kind of quickly glance over a little bit of the, you know, of the emotions and stuff. And we'll talk about this game right now. And I think,
yeah, because I was going to ask you, I think like you're pretty much the only person that hasn't really been able to weigh in on this yet. So I'm curious your thoughts, because I feel like as time progresses, I'm more and more on an island. And so I'm curious to hear what you think.
Okay. So I'm of two opinions here. And the first one I'll go with is my first gut instinctual type feel. And that is the organization had said and started out with, hey, we're going to do this rebuild. You know, we have pieces that have been signed with long extensions, and we're going to try to pull the LA model. You know, I really fully believed that Greer was going to try and do the LA model, where you keep some of the high-priced veterans for a long time, try to rebuild around them, and try to support them with the younger and faster legs. And we've both seen enough hockey to know that if you give the keys to a bunch of kids without having any real good leadership and really showing the kids how to win, then this type of experiment really doesn't bode well. I mean, we've seen Edmonton, you know, for the first incarnation of the rebuild for Edmonton and how that took shape and what they did. And with the departure of Hurdle, I'm very concerned that we are not going to have a veteran who's young enough at heart to really empathize or really to get in the mind of the young kids coming up. And I felt that if there was one player that who could kind of shepherd along the young kids, because he, you know, he kind of a kid at heart, was Hurdle.
Yeah.
He was a guy that brought a lot of enthusiasm and love for the game, which I think cannot be understated, because when you're doing a lot of losing, you start to look at this game as a job, and you start to look at it as a daily grind, where you do need to have some of those guys that bring the lighter energy, that bring a little bit more fun, if I must pull a hurdleism. And now, not having that, I really do wonder what the approach is going to be from the development standpoint on the ice with having good veteran leadership to help shepherd along the kids. At this point, I don't think Logan's coming back. I think he's done. I think he's probably, his career is finished. I hate to conjecture about that, and I hate to say that because I've watched him, like you, since he came up and was a baby Worcester Shark and all the way through. But with the amount of mileage that body has had on it, and with the types of injuries that Couture has sustained, I think now we're talking about just having him have a good quality of life at this point versus actually being able to contribute on the ice.
Yeah, because I think the one thing when it comes to Couture's injury, I think the thing that I always try to preface is this isn't an injury that gets better, quote unquote. It's an injury that you manage.
Yep.
Exactly. So, I mean, I can definitely, I definitely echo the same concerns there, because I think it's just one of those things where it's like, it'll never be better. It's the question is, can he manage it to a point where he can consistently play a bunch of different games again?
Well, I mean, and I guess, we are here. I see a little bit of backlash from Ricky in the chat. And for every rebuild that we see the kids given the keys and handed the keys to the Ferrari and just to drive it off the side of the road, we look at teams like L.A., we look at and honestly, we can look just down the street at Anaheim, and we can look and see at how much they've been locked in their rebuild for. And they've kind of done something similar to the Sharks, where there isn't really a good base veteran leadership.
Yeah, I think the thing with Anaheim too, though, and because I remember, because Anaheim's another team that always gets brought up. It's like, well, look at Anaheim. It's like, Anaheim's a situation too, though, where it's like, and this is why, as much as maybe I am less of a fan of Mike Greer than I've been since he's been here, the concern always becomes like, this is where a guy like Pat Verbeek takes over, and everyone kind of thinks that, man, look at LA's right there and Anaheim's just below them, right? And then Pat Verbeek comes in and doesn't see it that way at all.
Mm-mm.
Right. And I think that's the one concern. Like, so when people are like, oh, my career, and I get it. And I'm like, look at this is the least invested in this team that I've ever been. But at the same time, it always makes me nervous, because it's like, Anaheim's a situation where a new guy gets another, a fresh set of eyes on it and says, I don't really like where this is going. And then kind of resets kind of where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it the same thing in Philadelphia with the regime change there. I mean, so for every rebuild success story I can give you, I can also give you a rebuild nightmare, it feels like. And I'm not saying that Greer is not the right person for this job, but I do wonder why the team didn't look for someone with more GM experience, or at least has an idea of player personnel and coming from that direction, than coming from a guy who was in the New York organization for, 3 years, if that, and then was given his shot. I'm a little concerned. And I think the other thing that I'm also concerned about, that probably is more concerning than the on-ice veteran leadership, is the development staff. I think, I look at John McCarthy and I go, again, why was a a junior coach not brought in? Why wasn't another
college coach
brought in? Why? What did they see in McCarthy that led them to believe he could be a better developer of talent than, you know, someone who's had a track record of doing it before? And
my, you know, my opinion on that,
they didn't want to pay the money.
That's exactly it. I think the one thing over this saga that I didn't realize until the Hurdle trade was how much I've soured on ownership.
Yeah. Yeah. And the absentee ownership at times when he's just writing blank checks, that's a good thing. When you've got a stable system and you've got an idea and a trajectory to go places. Yeah. But when you don't have a good idea of what leadership and ownership is thinking about as far as where the team's future successes are going to be, and quite frankly, an ownership group that I feel is
it's one guy.
Yeah, it's very disconnected from the entire hockey community, right? Where he doesn't have a lot of in connections with either, you know, North American hockey in general.
Oh, I disagree with that. I disagree with that a lot. I think that Hasso Plattner, like, he's not the most vocal and out there guy, but he's like, and you can see this with, like, you know, when the NHL needed to do, like, when the NHL needs a sponsor, like, SAP's right up there. Why? Because Hasso Plattner is one of, like, I think that compared to the older ownership of the Sharks, like when CBA talks would come around, you talk about Hawks and Doves, the Sharks were generally in the Dove category of that conversation. Hasso Plattner is not a Dove.
No,
he is a Hawk, and he is very much
that's on the business side. I'm talking about.
But I'd say like he is very, but he is like I would say that Hasso Plattner, very quietly, mind you, is like one of Gary Bettman's top owners, like as far as in that group of guys that really run the league.
And with that, I do agree. I just wonder about on the development staff, if he doesn't have the connections to the different leagues below. And what I'm saying is, you know, you've got to have a good pool of candidates to pull from, right? You've got to, you know, in this league, there's so much cross-pollination, whether it's, you know, bringing in coaches from the CHL, or bringing in coaches from college, or bringing in coaches from even Europe at times. I wonder if he doesn't have the hockey ops knowledge. And
well, he doesn't, but I think that's where the failure in ownership comes, right? Because if you look at, because he's always let the hockey people make the hockey decisions, and which is fine. I mean, I would prefer that. I would rather that than your Dolans, your, you know, your guys that are way too involved, right? That just like come in and like the hockey operations is doing something, and then the owner's like, oh, no. Actually, we're going to tear all this up. We're going to do this. But at the same time, right, if ownership had more of a hand on the wheel, then does frickin' Joe Will, of all people, get to decide the future of the franchise before a GM's hired by re-signing Hurdle to begin with? Probably not, right? Like that to me is a failure in ownership. We should get to the game though.
yeah, we will. I just, you know, I think a little bit of this existential line of thinking can kind of,
oh yeah,
you know, put us a little bit at, okay, where is the team going to go after, you know, inevitably they end 32nd or 31st overall, and just trying, sure, to give an idea of, you know, kind of what my thoughts are. But the second part of what I was thinking, finally, just to put a book on an end on the Hurdle trade. Look, we know where they're at in the arc of the rebuild. It looks like it's closer to the beginning than it is closer to the end, and having an
100%,
and having an 8-year deal that had what, 6 years remaining left on it, it was not compatible with where the team is at. So if I'm looking at it realistically, that extension probably should have never been signed in the first place, and he should have been traded when he had his highest arc of value. And again, I think for me at least, it's the, hey, we're in this camp and then we decide to go to a different camp. And again, I bring it back to ownership and wondering, maybe there should be somebody in on top of Greer. Greer can just be the GM, and then you have, you know, the executive vice president of hockey ops who can help handhold Hasso through, you know, connections and things of that sort. Because if you had somebody installed as a hockey ops guy, Will would have never been able to have signed that
100%. Yeah, 100%.
That contract. So, like I said, I believe that Hasso is a smart business guy, and as far as having the connections with other owners and other ownership group and having Gary's ear and being able to provide different services with SAP for NHL, I think that that's all great. I think the business ops he can definitely take care of. But the actual hockey ops, I wonder. I wonder for a guy who spends 6 months over in Germany every year, right? Because he can't be here. He's not a U.S. citizen. That there's not he doesn't have enough time on the ground here to really get a good understanding of the hockey ops side. And that's kind of all that I really wanted to say on that point. Because I don't disagree with you. I think he's very business savvy, and I think he's made a lot of good inroads as far as the Sharks as an organization within the NHL being a power broker, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But having said all of that, you know, we'll talk about the Sharks losing to the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-3. The Sharks seeing the familiar face of Erik Karlsson, you know, and you look at that team and you go, okay, what are they going to do, right? Because they seem to be at the end of their arc, right? Kind of where the Sharks were 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
Yeah, the thing with the Penguins is they're in denial about it, though. Like, because I can't imagine a situation, like, unless, like, Crosby, Malkin, and Letang aren't going anywhere unless they want to go somewhere.
Right.
Like, so they're still kind of in denial of the bed they've made. Now, I still think, like, they're going to try and do things in the offseason to try and make this thing better. Because I know the big talk now is like, oh, should we get the Penguins picked this year, or are they going to be worse next year? But the one thing that I always go back to with that conversation is there's no guarantee that Penguins pick is going to be this bad next year. Because I think they are going to try and make moves in the offseason to try and make this team better. Like, as long as those three are on this team, they're going for it.
Right.
Now, will those moves work and make them better, or will they continue this drop? I don't know, right? But it's not like, I don't think that the Penguins pick being better next year is a given. It could go either way, obviously, but I don't think it's the sure thing that everyone wants it to be. I understand that next year would be unprotected, which is nice, but there's no guarantee that's a better pick.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the Penguins might even think along the same lines and go, hey, you know what? We might actually be worse next year. Why don't we just give them the pick that we know, you know, it's a known quantity of where it's going to be now versus, you know, next year where, you know.
I think if you're the Penguins, if you can make that pick, if it's in a position like where it's top 10, you take it, because again, your whole mindset is, we're going to be better next year, so we're going to take this better pick because it's in the top 10, it's protected, it's ours, and let San Jose have, you know, the hopefully the higher pick that is maybe, you know, potentially a playoff team. I don't see it, but again, that's the modus operandi for them. That's what they need to do. As long, like, they're going to go for it. So they have to, if you're going for it, you have to believe that pick next year is going to be a much higher pick in the draft. So you let the Sharks have that one. You draft in the top 10, you laugh all the way to the bank.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this kind of all kind of revolves around Erik Karlsson, right? And he had a big, big game, you know, against the Sharks today. I mean, he had a couple, one assist, but it was kind of all over the ice. And you could tell he probably had a chip on his shoulder a little bit playing against his old team. He would help out in that first period with Noel Achari's fourth goal of the season. Erik Karlsson and Drew O'Connor getting the assists there. I think at the opening of the period, I think the Sharks did a pretty good job of hemming the Penguins in their own zone. I felt like they had a lot of good zone time.
I was surprised. I didn't expect the Sharks to come out that hard.
The unfortunate part about that, though, is the Achari goal kind of taking a little bit of the wind out of the sails. Although the Sharks would do a good job of reestablishing position and reestablishing, you know, shots on goal. It wasn't as dominant as like that first 7 minutes of the game, but Fabian Zetterlund would get his 17th of the season, 14:31 into the first, and Addison and Thrun getting the assists there. So good to see Addison and Thrun, you know, helping out on the back end. And again, the team really needs to have some of these guys develop, because you look at the defensive prospects on the team, and we still are wondering, okay, is there enough there to get this to critical mass, or are we still looking for more? And I think with Ian's reaction, I can tell we're still definitely looking for more on the back end.
I mean it's definitely, but the thing is with what I'll say about the defense is it's definitely something that Mike Greer, to his credit, has tried to address. I think if you've looked at where he's tried to really bring in guys to look at, it's been on the blue line, right? The trade with the Lightning, they bring in a D-man. The Timo Meier trade, you know, you get Mookie Badula, and it's definitely something he's tried to address. I think it's something that they need to continue addressing, though. Like, I like, there's a lot of potential pieces on the blue line in the pipeline that I like. I just don't think, like, they still need that 1-2 guy, though.
Yeah, and they need a known commodity from a 1-2 perspective, not just something that they can kind of bank on, you know what I mean? So again, we'll quickly get to some of the post game comments, and thank you AJ and Eric for doing yeoman's work there. You know, this is one of the D-men that's a stalwart on the line right now. I thought it was we did a pretty good job. We did a decent job managing, and a couple of shifts I thought I was okay. Again, you know, we thought that Ferraro was going to be a guy that we could build the defense around and be a young Mark Edward Vlasic type. But I think, you know, just again with the way that the Sharks have gone,
yeah,
I think that he's definitely been a victim a little bit of the talent around him, or the lack thereof, the devoid.
I don't know, man. Ferraro's a guy where I think, like, he's a guy who the engine's definitely running. Like, there's no questioning the work ethic of Mario Ferraro. I just don't think there's anyone behind the wheel.
Yeah, and again,
like, I don't question the motor. I question, but no one's driving.
Yeah, and could that also be a fact of in great timing there, AJ, with the quotes? They got momentum on that 4-on-4, but we got some of it back at the end of the period. We battled hard, but fatigue didn't help us out. And that's Coach Quinn saying that. Is that a problem from the coaching perspective? Because I've called into question about whether or not Quinn is the right coach to be developing players. Speaking of players and just kind of where they're at in their career arc, I mean, Mark Edward Vlasic would also chip in with a goal, his sixth of the season in 1901, and Kostin and Mikael Granlund getting the assists there, giving the Sharks the lead 2-1 going into that second period. But Ian, I throw it back to you. Quinn, I mean, do you think he's done enough to help the defensive structure of the team and to help the D-men grow into positions that they're able to successfully be in? I think he has.
Yeah, Quinn's a tricky one, right? And I'm gonna give a really wishy-washy answer here, and I do apologize, because I look at the construction of this team, right? And I think there's only so much any coach could do with the construction of this team. And it kind of goes back to what I said, the concerns with Mike Greer, right? Where it's like, I think that I'm probably, this is the least favorable my feelings have been towards Greer since he started. I don't think I've ever had amazing feelings for David Quinn as a head coach, but at the same time, right, you don't want to like, but I don't want to see the Sharks have, you know, guys come in and then have more coaches than years in the league either. Because I don't think you're going to get significantly better results with another coach, and you don't want better results right now.
I agree up to the point of development. I think that having a coach who knows how to develop young players into good players in this league is important.
But they have good, like, but they have decent assistants. Like, the last thing you want to do, because everyone's like, oh, we just, you know, Ryan Rosofsky's waiting in the wings, right?
Right. Right.
But here's the reality of it. Do you want to, so you fire David Quinn now because you don't think he's developing good enough. And that's fine. I you know, and I'm not going to argue that point. But then you bring in Ryan Rosofsky, who's, you know, a big up and coming coach in the league. And then obviously, you know, he puts the team wrong and maybe he starts developing players. But guess what? When the team needs to start winning, he's the first guy out the door.
Right. But again, you have to build that up and just quickly last on Quinn from the fourth line, managing pucks a little bit better and defending it a little bit better. Mind you, that is a fourth line that is comprised of Kevin LeBanc, so I'm surprised that any kind of praise had come out for the fourth line. But anyhow, I digress. I just have not seen enough development defensively as far as the structure goes in the last three seasons.
Yeah, but look who's playing defense. Like, look at the blue line, though. You have the husk of Mark Edward Vlasic. You have Kyle Burrows. You have, like, you know what I mean? Like, look at the guys that are playing on the blue line.
I agree with that. But Dave Tippett got so much out of a shit Coyotes defense playing trap. And I'd rather them play trap hockey and lose 2-1 than continually allow to have stupid defensive mistakes that we continually see. And they don't get better.
I think if you're talking like development on the blue line, though, like, there's really, like, who's on the blue line right now that is a guy other than Thrun?
I mean, Addison, that's, right? I mean, you traded for Addison.
Yeah, I think Addison has come along better, but he's not there to shut guys down. He was there to help a power play that couldn't get anything going. He had no guys, you know, you have no guys that were offensively on the blue line. You had to play a forward on the blue line because they had nobody back there that could do it. All these guys are more on the defensive side of the puck than the offensive side. I mean, other than Henry Thrun, who I think has had a decent season, I don't, like, who back, you're not developing any of the guys back there. Vlasic, Ferraro, Burrows, I'm forgetting who else, Jan Rutto, like, these aren't guys you're developing. These are guys that are just there to
fill spots fill warm bodies till the kids are ready.
Yeah. Like, there's no development happening there because there's no one on the blue line that they're actively developing. Like, you know, you could argue, okay, earlier, you know, you had Nikita Hotiuk, but again, like, I don't think he was a good player to start. So I don't think that was a failure of development. I think it was just a guy who was really big that Mike Greer liked because he had a tendency to, you know, and again, a more defensive guy on the blue line who, you know, to his credit, you know, could lay the body and did lay the body pretty hard. But other than that, incredibly one dimensional. Right. So I don't, like, so I hear what you're saying, but I don't know who, when I look at who's played the blue line all year, like, I just don't know who's actually getting developed there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the other question that I would have is who's developing them in the AHL? and you know,
that's another argument completely.
Right. So I mean, if you're not developing at the NHL level and it's been 3 years and you're not developing,
but that's not on David Quinn.
No, it's not. I agree with that, but I think, to me at least, the dissembling in their own zone and the lack of cohesive structure in the defensive zone, I've just seen this reel on replay for 3 years, and I don't like what I'm seeing. And the good habits that you're trying to instill with young kids coming up of playing 200 foot hockey is not happening when you see, you know, the veteran corpse of Mark Edward Vlasic just, you know, having the controller disconnect every time somebody bum rushes him, right? I don't think it's a good look. I think it's, you know, losing breeds losing, and you don't have any good fundamentals to fall back on. And that's all I'm saying. And again, that's what I've been trying.
This organization is doing a shit ton of losing right now, and that is not fantastic, right? Like, the Barracuda obviously not have a great season. I will say again that, like, obviously injuries did kind of throw a wrench in the Barracuda season, not only from just the injuries that the Barracuda players have had, but I think, like, you know, when you look at the Barracuda team and you're like, wow, you know, they could really use a guy like Justin Bailey. They could really use a guy like Ryan Carpenter, right? Who basically, you know, replaced injuries early in the season and basically never went back. Now, you know, with Carpenter and Bailey down there all year, am I saying this Barracuda team's a playoff team? I don't know. I don't think so still. I think there's still some other issues down there to address. But with the way injuries have kind of ravaged that team and the parent club, for that matter, I'm not going to make it, like, it's not an excuse, but it has to be acknowledged.
Yeah, agreed. I think you would love to see some more development, though, at least as far as, like, individual stats and individual prospects that, you know, you have high hopes upon. I mean, a guy like Bortolo, for instance. I mean, we saw started in the NHL, was slow, went back and kind of did a similar to a Barkley Goodrow, right, where he had to go back and really had to find his game. I think he did, and then you bring him back up again. That's a good success to me, but for every one of those, I mean, I've got like four or five that just have not taken that step and just have not been able to provide what the organization thinks. So again, maybe there's a disconnect between talent evaluation and what talent they actually have. Maybe there's a disconnect in the way in which they're trying to develop players, but again, a guy who hasn't really needed to develop anymore because he's almost time for retirement. Jeff Carter getting his ninth of the season, 4 minutes and 11 seconds in that second period. Emil Bernstrom getting the assist there, and that would tie it up 2-2. Then Evgeny Malkin would score 7 minutes later. O'Connor and Eller would get the assist there. On that particular goal, I mean, again, Evgeny just goes in alone, you know, one-on-one with Krona, and you're just sitting there and you're like, okay, how is this, you know, this is not going to end well. You could just see the writing on the wall on that one. And again, like, having him be that wide open and getting that clear of a shot, that to me is like defensive structure. Like, come on, guys, where are you here? Every, you know, goaltender after goaltender is just getting hung out to dry. And again, it's just not good cohesive defensive play. And again, I think that has more to do with coaching than it does with the types of players. Because again, I bring up Dave Tippett and just whatever he was able to do, you know, whatever he was able to do with really crappy Coyotes teams and keeping the game scored low. At least he'd make his goaltenders look halfway decent.
Super chat.
Yeah, thank you, Richie. Appreciate it. Richie, what do you think about the head coach, and are we going to be better in the future? Well, Richie, I hope that we're going to be better in the future because, quite frankly, watching any more of this for an extended period would be, well, I mean, you're a Raiders fan. You know how it goes.
I mean, Richie, here's my take on it, right? Like, with the exception of Jared Bednar, like, Jared Bednar is the only coach that I can think of off the top of my head that survived a rebuild and went and was there when the team returned to prominence again. With the exception of that, like, I think David Quinn is the coach for now. I don't think he's going to be the guy that's going to be here when things start turning around. I think when you look at a lot of other teams that have gone through rebuilds, you know, Detroit being another, I think, a really more recent example of this, like the second that they started to be on the upward trajectory. And then, you know, I think the coach, because eventually the coach needs, you need to start winning, right? The rebuild needs to end at some point.
Yeah.
And I think that when the second that the coach who's been there through the whole thing kind of, the GM sees that things are kind of falling off the rails again, it's looking like it's going to be another, you know, another one of those seasons where you don't actually go anywhere. It's time to bring in a new guy. And I think Detroit's a really recent example of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff Blashill was supposed to be, you know, the up and coming wunderkind, type mm-hmm. coach. And look at how they languished for many years under him.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think, yeah, see, I, you see that a lot with, teams that are like coming out of a rebuild. You're going to see head coaches go, I don't think David Quinn is the long-term guy. I think he's the guy for right now. And then eventually there will be another guy. And,
but
you know,
he was kind of sold as the teacher though. And that's, that sure. to me was either it's a disservice by management saying that, or it's, he's not really that good of a teacher. that's
again,
where I get
though,
back
I think
to.
Like, but again, I think like if you're looking at, I David Quinn's not my favorite guy. But I don't know. I think that I don't know what coach would come in here and do better. And I don't think we want someone to come in here and do better. Like, I think the worst place to be is one of these teams that languishes in that, you know, that outside of the playoff bubble, but not in the, you know, the big lottery hunt.
You mean Minnesota circa 2010 through 2017?
Yeah, if you look at the standings right now, right? Like, what are the teams that you don't want to be? You know, you're talking about teams like, you know, I hate to use like the, you don't want to be where like the, where the Penguins are, right? Or the Buffalo Sabres are right now.
Oh,
you don't want
gosh.
To be one of those teams, right? Yeah. Where you're, you know, you're a decent number of points out of the playoffs, but you're not also not in the running for the lottery.
And for Buffalo, I mean, that's just, you want to talk about a case of false starts. I mean, and
yeah.
almost as bad as Edmonton, maybe worse in some respects because they've been worse for longer, but
yeah. But I think you could bring in Stan Bowman, or not Stan Bowman. Who am I thinking?
Scotty Bowman.
Thank you. Yeah. You could bring in Scotty Bowman to like coach this team and you ain't getting shit out of him. Like, I don't know.
Well, something, you know, one player they did get some shit out of today, and that would be Klim Kostin getting his first goal as a Shark. Mikael Granlund and Marc-Edouard Vlasic getting the assist there. And oh, look at that. Marc-Edouard Vlasic with a 2-point night.
Yeah, 2-point night. I think the thing is like the one thing that I think the thing you have to be careful of, right, is you're going to see guys that are going to be put in positions to do well, right? I think Klim Kostin's a guy who's going to get a lot of quality minutes right now. And he had like his numbers in Edmonton weren't terrible. Right, like obviously he took some money and went to Detroit and it didn't work out for him sometimes, you know, and sometimes that happens to a guy. But I think the thing that I would kind of caution as we approach the end of the season, especially as we're in garbage time, is that you're going to see names that are going to do really well, and you have to be careful of that because these are players that are going to be put into situations where they're going to play big minutes, and then things are going to happen, right? Like no team is so objectively terrible they get blown out. Like as bad as we've seen some teams be in the league, the Sharks team is pretty bad when it comes to like historically bad teams. The Sharks team's up there, but those teams still pick up wins. Guys are still going to score goals, right? And I think the thing that I would caution is just like getting too excited about some of these guys, because these guys on another team wouldn't be getting the same minutes that they're going to get now.
Paging Mikael Granlund, anyone? I mean,
you know what I mean?
So I
caution that, right? Because I think you're going to see guys like Filip Zadina and like Klim Kostin that are going to put up a bunch of points. I'm going to say, oh my God, this is so great. And it's great for them. And I'm not trying to like take anything away from them, but I think there's going to be some players that Sharks fans are overly going to project based on playing minutes that they would never play on a contender.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, we just talked about Mikael Granlund. I mean, he's averaging almost 21 minutes a night.
Yeah. Mikael Granlund's great. I mean, and you know, and he's a good veteran guy who's had history of success and apparently the legs of a child.
Yeah, right. Richie, thank you again. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate that.
He misses Peter DeBoer. Wish he never left.
I appreciate your $5 super chat. We do love the super chat. I do not miss Peter DeBoer.
I'm sorry, one of those coaches that has a short shelf life, right? I mean, once the 3 years is up with him, that the narrative that he continually uses just gets stale real fast.
I think he was the coach when the Sharks went to the Stanley Cup final, and I will always be grateful for that. But he's not my guy. If he's your guy, that's cool. I don't want to like super disparage.
T-Mac was my guy. I loved T-Mac. And I loved what he did. I think he came from a good organization.
I still think T-Mac is the best coach this team's ever had. But all coaches have a shelf life, and his was definitely up when he left. But I still think that he was the best coach this team's ever had.
Well, now I guess we'll have to talk about the third period. I really don't want to talk about this, but the Penguins would come out with their butts on fire. And, you know, I think when they saw they were tied with one of the worst teams in the league going into the third period and kind of had their backs up against the wall, they just kind of put pedal to the metal. And Ludwig coming in and getting a second of the season, making it 4-3. P.O. Joseph would get the assist with Riley Smith. And then you've got Ricard Raquel scoring about 2 minutes later with P.O. Joseph again getting the assist there, and
yeah,
Ludwig getting the assist. So really, that
I'm gonna
third
go back
line.
To something. I want to say something about Peter DeBoer, though.
Okay.
The one thing I will say about Peter DeBoer is that he was shackled to Martin Jones, which wouldn't help any coach. Because obviously, like, as much as Martin Jones was good when he started, man, he fell off a fucking cliff. And
yeah, he did.
Kind of Peter DeBoer was kind of the victim of Martin Jones falling off a cliff.
Yeah.
So I will say that in Peter DeBoer's defense.
And then finally, Brian Rust would put the nail in the coffin, giving the Penguins the 6-3 victory. That would be Brian Rust's 19th of the season. Letang and Crosby getting the assists, keeping the Penguins' playoff hopes on life support at this moment. I mean, just quickly, and where do we think where the Penguins are? I mean, I don't see this team making the playoffs.
No, they're done. You can definitely stick a fork in them this year. They're in a weird situation, right? Because I think they're in a situation where as long as the big three are there, Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, they're going to go for it. And I just wonder what it would take to get them to change that. Now, I know that Sidney Crosby, I believe, has one more year left on his deal, and then he is a free agent. So obviously, I think, you know, there are points where I think if Sidney Crosby decides he wants to go elsewhere. Now, I don't think he does. I think he wants to retire a Penguin. But if he decides like he wants to go elsewhere, if Malkin decides he wants to go elsewhere, Letang, someone might take Letang's deal, but he's, you know, Letang is definitely, I think, the older of the three. I don't know, man. I think like those guys have been loyal to Pittsburgh, so Pittsburgh wants to be loyal to them, and I get it. As an outside person, I think that ideally those guys would decide that like, it's, you know, the run is over and try to mercenary themselves out. And I think that would give Dubas some flexibility. But I think as long as they want to be there, I don't know if ownership has the appetite to break them up.
Well, and I mean, here's the other thing, too. I mean, there's nothing stopping Gino and from Crosby just to hang them up after this, you know, like after their contracts are done. Just be like, hey, you know what? We've achieved everything we wanted to do. I mean, we've won back-to-back Stanley Cups. We've won, you know, Stanley. We've gone to the Stanley Cup 1 year, and then the following year win it. I mean, they've done so much in this league, and they're both going to be Hall of Famers. Like,
oh, all three of them.
And so, to me, it's almost like, what more do you need to accomplish in this league? And look, the will of an athlete, you never underestimate that, and never underestimate where they're at. But
I was going to say, you know what's better than three Stanley Cups? Four Stanley Cups.
was just going to say, I mean, you saw how Mario Lemieux went out, and he kind of went out in the height of his powers. Now, mind you, a lot of that had to do with the injury history, but...
Yeah, cancer and everything else, yeah.
But do we see something maybe similar for those two players and just like, hey, you know what, we've just done it. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the offseason for Pittsburgh. I think, you know, the writing's on the wall as far as the team needing to do something in order to infuse some more talent or infuse some more fresh bodies or fresh legs, whatever they need. But, you know, I think if they continue on this course, they're just going to be in that mushy middle, like you were saying.
Yeah. Tom C in the chat saying you want the Sharks to bring John Tortorella. John Tortorella is a guy I wish they brought in like before things really fell off the rails, right? Like when they fired Peter DeBoer, like that's the guy I would have brought in to get one more kick at the can instead of handing it over to Bob Bugner. But then, you know, just to see if he could get like an ounce out of that crew before it got destroyed. John Tortorella is an interesting guy who I like, but I think he's a guy you bring into it. Like he's the guy you bring in at the end of the rebuild. He's not the guy you bring in now.
No.
Although he can, you know, the one thing I will say about John Tortorella is that he's like the perfect guy to bring in a guy and see if you can course correct on a guy like Ferraro or, you know, some of the younger D. I think that the one thing that John Tortorella does really well is he coaches D really well.
And I think it like brings a work
defenseman
ethic.
Be better. Yeah. But I find like defensemen generally, if a defenseman can't improve under Tortorella, like there's no hope for them. Like, and you saw like the Flyers, this offseason, you know, they traded, did they trade Provorov or did he sign his free? I can't remember exactly how Provorov left, but like he couldn't do anything with Provorov and now Provorov's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Cause that's the sign.
Yeah. Well, Richie, thank you. 3 for 3. High five, my
thank
Sharks
you,
bros.
Yes.
And no, we appreciate it, dude. And
appreciate it.
Again, you know, we do this because, you know, we love interacting with the fans. We love bringing our perspectives, you know, to the internet airwaves. And I mean, just kind of gives us an outlet to talk about this team and see where it's going and getting the pulse of everybody kind of watching. And again, we do it as a labor of love, but you know, we're hitting 45 minutes.
Keep the lights on.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think pretty good 49 in the chat, and it's kind of really summed up it really well. You know, these are the games you want. It was an entertaining game. The Sharks lost. What more do you want at this point in the season? That's what you want.
Yep.
I want to be entertained. I want the Sharks to lose. This game checks all those boxes.
Yeah. I would maybe like it if they were a little bit more defensively sound and lose like a 2-1 game, but I agree. As long as
give me all the goals.
Well, how about we just leave it there. In case you missed it and you want to catch us again, check us out on the YouTube Rewind. Like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified when we go live. Of course, if you're a long timer, you know we go live after every single Sharks game. Folks, we don't know why we do it either. but you can check us out wherever you get your podcasts, that being the Apple Podcast Store, the Google Play Store, the aforementioned YouTube Rewind, SoundCloud, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeart, Odyssey app, and then always you can find the rewinds over at tealtownusa.com. And Ian, I think we're going to start to wrap it up here, but you know, what are your final thoughts and what other people can find you?
When the Sharks do bad, it's good, obviously. I mean, that's the way. When the Sharks do good, it's good, but when the Sharks do bad right now, it's also good.
And I guess, you know, I'll echo those sentiments as well. Let's just beat Chicago for the crap bowl. I mean, as far as like let Chicago win 6-1. Yeah, exactly. And we really want the Sharks to pick first overall. I don't think I could stomach seeing Chicago get a first overall again and just watch as the Kane and Taves 2.0 ascent happens once again because of you know, the rigmarole that goes into the draft lottery. But I'll just leave it there, and we'll bid you adieu, as it was. And for all of us here at Teal Town USA, you know how we like to end it. We like to keep it real, we like to keep it teal, and we like to keep it real teal. And we hope that you have a great rest of your evening, and we'll see you after the next Sharks game. And that's it from us. So have a great night, everybody.